Good morning. This is AM. I'm Tony Eastley. Rescuers in Oklahoma say they'll search every demolished building repeatedly until they're sure they've found all the survivors and recovered bodies from the tornado that hit yesterday. The death toll is 24, far less than originally thought, but authorities say they can't be certain others aren't missing. The worst hit area included a primary school in which 7 children were killed. North America correspondent Lisa Miller.
As daylight revealed the extent of the damage, Oklahoma City's Mayor Mick Cornett marvelled that anyone had survived.
This was the storm of storms.
Locals recounted their close calls.
So we went under a bridge and took cover under the bridge. We heard the storm. It went right over us and felt the debris. He got hit with some rocks and stuff, but it was the scariest thing that I have ever went through.
It was south of me, and then it was north of me, and then all of a sudden it was coming at me and I didn't have a choice, so I got in my closet and survived the storm.
The tornado struck just before 3 p.m. in Moore, taking out street after street, destroying a school where at least 7 children were killed. Schools administrator Susan Pierce says all safety procedures were followed.
We're in the process of learning as much about as we can about what has happened, and we are reviewing our emergency procedures today.
The initial death toll from the storm, which some thought would reach more than 90, was scaled back as the chaos subsided. State Governor Mary Fallon isn't sure what the final figure will be.
We know that there are people that and bodies have been taken to the medical examiner's office, but we have also heard that there may be bodies that have been taken to local funeral homes.
Rescue teams faced serious challenges besides the lack of power and water.
If you get into some of the major neighborhoods, you can't tell where the streets were. The street signs are gone, and that's been a big challenge for us, is being able to determine which area of a community we might be in.
Dr. Roxy Albert treated many of the victims, some with serious head injuries.
And a number of patients with impalements of different types of metal, wood, pieces of loose debris that were flying through the air.
This is one of the worst natural disasters Oklahoma has faced, but there have been brighter moments. Barbara Garcia thought her dog lay dead beneath the mess of collapsed wood and steel that had been her home for 45 years.
And I never lost consciousness, and I hollered for my little dog, and he didn't answer.
Then on live TV, her pet poked a nose through the rubble.
Oh, Bounty, bless your little bitty heart. Well, I thought God just answered one prayer to let me be okay. He answered both of them.
Rebuilding will be a big task. The U.S. president promised Oklahoma it would have whatever federal aid it needed.
Americans from every corner of this country will be right there with them, opening our homes, our hearts to those in need, because we're a nation that stands with our fellow citizens as long as it takes.
There was no break for Oklahoma, though. More storms with lightning and rain continued to threaten the area. This is Lisa Miller for AM.
North America correspondent Ben Knight is in Oklahoma City, close to where the tornado passed through. Ben Knight, good morning. You're in the area where the tornado touched down. Can you describe to us the scene there now, a day after the tornado?
The thing that struck me, Tony, is just how clearly you can see exactly where the tornado went through. You can literally see the houses that were hit and the houses that weren't, because the ones that were hit don't exist anymore. The ones that weren't are still standing, and they're right next door. And in some cases, the edge of the storm has cut the ones in half that were standing in between. So what you have, it's like nothing I've ever seen except in a war zone. It really gives you an incredible sense of just how strong these winds were. There's just across from the medical centre here, which has also been destroyed, there was an empty field, and it's now almost full of cars that look like they have simply been thrown off a cliff and bounced on rocks all the way down. They've been destroyed, and you look at them and you realise that this was simply done by wind. It's really quite remarkable. So apart from the immediate problems of simply trying to find some place to live, this is going to be an enormous reconstruction project.
Well, that begs the question, I suppose. Will they rebuild in this area, which is known for its twisters?
Well, people that I'm talking to say that they are. I mean, for me, it's the obvious question. There was another massive tornado like this, which came through in 1999. There was another significant one just the day before this one hit. and it's almost taken exactly the same path. So, I mean, especially people who have houses here that did not have cellars. Now, you would know that in a lot of American houses, your cellar or your basement is a pretty basic addition, but especially when you're living in Tornado Alley. So people say, look, yes, this is our home, this is where we want to live, we are going to rebuild here, this is just part of life, but maybe next time we'll put a basement in.
Ben Knight, the death toll has thankfully been revised down quite dramatically. Why such a decrease in the number?
There's really no clear answer to that at the moment. The only thing that the governor, I think, had to say about it was that this was just the chaos. It was difficult to know exactly where bodies had been sent, where the injured had been sent, and somehow the figure was essentially doubled when, of course, it shouldn't have been. So it was an error in the right way, if you like, but no one really can tell exactly why that's happened. And we still, of course, don't have a death toll. As I say, the search is still going on. And when you have a look at the way that some of these very, very large buildings have simply been pancaked down, I'm not sure how you ever finish the search in the short space of time that they're talking about. They're saying that we'll all be done by nightfall tonight. I can't quite imagine that. There's a lot of rubble to sift through.
Correspondent Ben Knight in Oklahoma City. And you are listening to AM around Australia, where it's 16 and a half minutes past 7. To follow us on Twitter, just search the handle AM World Today PM, and the audio and transcripts of our stories can be found on our website. To find it, just type ABC space AM into your search engine and follow the links. Doctors, health researchers and a magistrate are welcoming prospective tougher rules designed to halt the overprescribing of a controversial anti-anxiety medication. AM has been told the drug Xanax is likely to be rescheduled by regulators as early as tomorrow. Xanax has been blamed for dangerous criminal behaviour, addictions and causing deaths. Xanax is a form of benzodiazepine, the same family as Valium and Rohypnol. Previous attempts to restrict the use of the popular drug have failed. Simon Santo has this exclusive report prepared with producer Alison McClymont.
In the space of a generation, the supply of the drug Xanax, generically known as Alprazolam, has exploded by more than 1,400%. Similar to Valium, it's prescribed to combat anxiety, panic attacks, sometimes even depression. It's not meant to be a doctor's first response when presented with symptoms, but the figures tell a very different story.
There certainly seems to be an epidemic of Xanax abuse in Australia.
Dr. Steve Hambleton is the federal president of the AMA.
This is not the first-line drug that you'd want, and yet people actually seek it out.
So how much pressure is a GP put under, for example, when a patient comes into the surgery?
Well, they can be put under an enormous amount of pressure, and it's often not the regular patients of the practice. It's often new people coming in.
Megan McNeil's sister died suddenly last year.
She just collapsed and no sign of struggle, anything like that. She still had her mobile phone in her hand, just looked like normal, and she's just fallen asleep.
She had 6 prescribed drugs in her system, including Xanax, and a history of drug addiction. While the family has already been through a coronial inquest, they are worried that the community is being kept in the dark about what can so easily go wrong.
You wonder, do the doctors actually know, and are they educated and are they aware of how dangerous this mix is?
Angela Rintoul works in preventive medicine at Melbourne's Monash University. She's concerned that Alprazolam or Xanax is being prescribed for extended periods.
Alprazolam's approved only for short-term use, which is 2 to 4 weeks in Australia, because there's no evidence of medical benefit beyond short-term. There's actually concerns about Alprazolam because it's actually a fast-acting benzodiazepine and it has a short half-life, which means it's more likely that patients could become dependent upon the drug.
On top of that, she says the drug commands a price on the street.
They can purchase Xanax on the street for around 3 tablets for $10. So there is a significant black market for Xanax in Australia.
The AMA's Steve Hambleton concedes his profession needs to lift its game.
We do need to make sure we're asking sufficient questions. Practices often need to have a practice policy set up to actually make sure that they minimise the misuse of this drug. Of course, if any doctor says they've never been fooled by a patient, they really haven't been around long enough.
AM understands that after a protracted battle, the federal government's Therapeutic Goods Administration is poised to tomorrow pave the way for Xanax to be rescheduled. That means doctors will have to think harder before prescribing, and it will be more difficult for anyone to remain on the drug for long periods. Drug manufacturers and other interested parties will have 2 weeks to challenge the rescheduling before a final ruling is made by the end of next month.
Simon Santo. Magistrate Tony Parsons sees firsthand the destruction caused by drug addiction. As the head of Victoria's Drug Court, he says the move to control the use of Xanax is long overdue. Tony Parsons is speaking here to Simon Santo.
Because I sit in the Drug Court of Victoria, I think I admittedly see the worst side of Xanax use in the community. But what I see is very scary. It's a drug that has terribly high addictive qualities, and it has an effect on the users, which is quite frightening. Commonly, I see people who have been binging on Xanax. The first thing that happens is that they lose their memory. So often we'll see defendants who wake up in the police cells. They'll have no memory of what's happened in the preceding 3 or 4 days, and they'll have no recollection at all of the fact that they're charged with 10 or 20 burglaries, or perhaps they've been driving at 150 or 180 kilometres an hour in a police chase in a 50 kilometre an hour police zone. So it's a dangerous drug when it's abused. It causes amnesia. It makes people lose almost all of their inhibition, and consequently very dangerous behaviour follows.
Now, I would imagine that you would see the effects of many destructive and dangerous drugs. How does Xanax differ from perhaps other ones?
Well, the great scourge in terms of illegal drugs in Victoria at the moment is ice, more correctly called methamphetamine, and that makes people behave extraordinarily recklessly. Xanax causes the same kind of behaviour, but people have no recollection of what happens when they're behaving that way. So that's what makes it particularly concerning, because people really lack the very basic capacity to make judgments about their own behaviours, and they behave appallingly.
Now, as a sitting magistrate, to what extent can you inquire about and discover about how an offender might have gotten hold of the drug in the first place?
Well, with most of the drugs that the drug court deals with, of course, they're illegal drugs obtained off the streets. But it's clear with Xanax that it's prescribed. It's a drug that ultimately hits the streets because a doctor has prescribed it. And that's a very great concern, because whilst undoubtedly the vast majority of doctors are committed to their Hippocratic Oath, the fact is that Xanax can only get on the street because it comes from a doctor's prescription. And that's a vice on one hand. On the other hand, it does make the drug very easy to control if the authorities want to address the problem that we see the drug causing in the community today.
The head of Victoria's Drug Court, Magistrate Tony Parsons, speaking to AM's Simon Santo. Technology giant Apple has been quizzed by US senators over its controversial tax haven arrangements. Apple is accused of using complex offshore tax loopholes to prevent paying billions of dollars of tax in the United States. The maker of the popular iPhone and iPad has denied the allegations and says it pays more than its fair share of American tax. I'm joined in the studio now by business editor Peter Ryan. Pete, good morning. How is Apple getting away with this, given that it's globally known as a US company and it's listed on Wall Street, yet it's got something to do with Ireland?
Well, Tony, Apple might be based in the United States, but in America, the corporate tax rate is 35%, which is quite high. So for tax purposes, Apple is domiciled in Ireland, where the corporate tax rate is a very low 12.5%, or lower in some cases. Now, Ireland is a popular tax haven for many companies, including the Australian building products company James Hardy. Now, Apple has been accused by a US Senate committee of using complex Irish loopholes to minimise or even avoid tax in the United States through a complex web of companies based in Ireland that are basically empty shop fronts. The committee has also revealed that an Irish company owns Apple's intellectual property, or IP, even though the research and development has all been done in the United States. Republican Senator John McCain all but accused Apple of being a tax evader.
For years, Apple has opted to forego fully contributing to the U.S. Treasury and to American society by shifting profits and circumventing U.S. taxes. In the last 4 years alone, Apple has avoided paying taxes on $44 billion in income. Apple executives enjoy reminding the public that the company is likely the largest corporate taxpayer in the United States. However, these same executives fail to mention another less attractive fact. Apple is also one of the biggest tax avoiders in America.
Republican Senator John McCain there. Peter Ryan, how has Apple responded to these claims about the Irish loophole?
Well, Apple's chief executive, Timothy Cook, has been under a lot of fire in relation to this, and he's been trying to explain why Apple uses the tax system and how it's all within the law. But Mr. Cook says Apple is still the biggest taxpayer in the United States, paying $16 million a day.
We pay all the taxes we owe, every single dollar. We not only comply with the laws, but we comply with the spirit of the laws. We don't depend on tax gimmicks. We don't move intellectual property offshore and use it to sell our products back to the United States to avoid taxes. We don't stash money on some Caribbean island.
Apple's chief executive, Timothy Cook. Peter, how common is it for big companies to use countries, and particularly Ireland, I suppose, as low tax havens?
Well, of course, minimising tax is the full-time job of corporate taxpayers everywhere. It's not just Apple. Google channels overseas sales through an Irish unit that pays most of its income to an affiliate in Bermuda. Amazon does a similar thing by channeling sales through Luxembourg, and closer to home, News Corporation moved its official headquarters from Adelaide several years ago to Delaware in the United States to lower its tax bill.
Business editor Peter Ryan, thank you very much. Australians have made history by winning the prestigious Chelsea Flower Show in London for the first time. And this year is special. The show is celebrating its centenary. The winners say they want to use the victory to promote the importance of horticulture in urban planning, something that has been ignored by many authorities in the past. Europe correspondent Mary Geeran reports from London.
This is the sound of colonials hijacking one of the old country's most illustrious prizes.
We are officially now the Usain Bolts of the landscaping world. That's who we are. We're the best in the world incredible. At what we do. That's what this means to us.
It's the ninth time Victorian horticulturalist Wes Fleming has created a team to compete in this hardy perennial, but it's the first time he or any other Antipodean has captured Best in Show.
First time that they can remember in history that all the judges voted for one garden for Best in Show.
And why do you think that is?
Have you seen the garden?
Yes, I have.
It's a bloody beautiful garden, and that's why I think it is.
It's taken 2 years and $2 million worth of labour and materials to produce the winning display, as much an engineering as a floral feat. The team visited Scotland to handpick 300 tonnes of rock to fashion a cliff. Stormwater from a neighbouring building feeds into waterfalls, sitting alongside a large glass and rusted steel studio shaped like a Waratah flower. There are even recordings of Australian native frogs. Landscape designer Philip Johnson says it's been a thrilling but exhausting exercise.
The remarkable thing that I don't think a lot of people realise back at home is I don't get paid for this, Wes doesn't get paid for this. The whole team takes 6 weeks away from their jobs to come and volunteer and represent Australia too in the Olympics of horticulture.
Wes Fleming says he started competing on a whim, but since then he's been blown away by media coverage and the influence that his bouquets from Chelsea judges give him and his colleagues back in Australia on issues ranging from climate change to town planning.
Here we are bitching about childhood obesity. We're concerned about kids spending too much time in front of the TV or the computer, but we're not creating spaces for them to get outside.
Wes Fleming says this is his swan song. Among other things, he carries away memories of royalty. He's met the Queen 7 times, and this year she went out of her way to see his latest offering.
The president of the Royal Horticultural Society nearly tackled her as she went up the stairs because she wasn't meant to.
The team is now throwing out a challenge to other Australian horticulturalists to follow in its winning path. This is Mary Geeran in London for AM.
And that's AM for today. Wall Street has closed at another record high on expectations that the US Fed Reserve will continue with its aggressive economic stimulus program. Stocks moved higher after an unnamed Fed official was quoted as saying the current bond buying strategy should continue for now. The Dow Jones closed up 52 points, the NASDAQ up 6. The dollar is buying 98 US cents, 75.9 euro cents, and 100.5 Japanese yen. I'm Tony Eastley, and that is AM for today.